You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Text line 69306 from the Pro Chance Either Purpose text line. You gotta love how much pleasure CDOT gets from KU losing, but can't understand how people unconditionally hate Duke. No, I definitely get why you hate Duke. I just like Zion way more than I hate Duke. I don't really get the pleasure from KU losing the way that you guys think I do. This week would be a lot more fun if KU had won. I certainly would love to see KU play North Carolina. My job and my livelihood is affected because of KU losing. I'm not sad KU lost. I'm not going to say that. But I wish they had won. I don't want to go much further than where they went, but I'm fine. I'm not.
Are you sure you don't have a Paul Pierce jersey underneath that hoodie, bro?
Come on now. You know what I'm saying. You know,
the rock chalk tattoo on the left
you
butt cheek.
You know I don't like Paul Pierce. He's one of the dudes I don't like Paul Pierce. I don't like Paul Pierce at all. But no, I don't have any joy from KU losing. This is the thing. And I sometimes feel like this. I feel like I've been very honest about KU all year, and it's always disguised as hate. I'm holding KU to the standards that KU fans hold themselves to.
Yeah, it cost you $200, didn't it, buddy?
It did. I hear KU fans tell me all the time, we're not like the rest of you peasants. We only hang banners up. You probably heard that, BK, right? You didn't hang any banners up this year. Your year was very forgettable. Nothing of relevance happened with Kansas basketball this year. You didn't win the Big 12, which you certainly care about the streak. You love having the day where Holly Rowe wears the rings on her fingers and they wheel all those trophies
this
out
there. This is the first time in 15 years I haven't bought myself a new T-shirt. It says Big 12 champions. It started with Big 12 champions, then back-to-back, then three, then four. I've done that the last 14 years. I didn't get a new T-shirt this year.
Didn't win the Big 12. Big 12 tournament in Kansas City.
No T-shirt.
Iowa State comes in. They take over your bars, power and light. They go in there, beat your team. No T-shirt. You then get a four seed in the NCAA tournament. I'm used to KU being a one. I'm used to KU being a two. I'm used to KU being part of the conversation. Whenever we were talking about teams that could win the NCAA tournament, no one brought up Kansas. Nobody brought up Kansas.
And if they weren't called Kansas, I don't think they would have been a four seed. You and BK were arguing before the show. Well, they had a lot of good wins. Yeah, they had a lot of good wins when they had Udoka Azubuike. They had a lot of good wins when they had LeGerald Vick. That's when they were beating Marquette and Michigan State.
No, I agree.
And all those teams. The team that entered the tournament was no better than, I don't know, like a seven seed?
No, I agree. This KU team was a seven seed that got propped up because of the wins at the beginning and got a four seed.
And because they were called Kansas, absolutely.
So we keep taking it one step further. You then make the NCAA tournament. You smoke Northeastern.
Like a Snoop Blunt.
Smoke Northeastern. And then you played Auburn, a football school. Got ran off the court. Where I feel like every time KU loses the NCAA tournament, we never can give... It's never Kansas' fault. It's just, I don't know what they could have done. Their team just shot so well. Maybe they shoot really well because your team doesn't go.
Man, here's where you start to get a little, disingenuous. KU was an underdog in the game and had half their players injured.
There's no reason to not go in there and not compete the way I don't think KU competed very well.
No, it was awful.
If you've watched Auburn basketball for 5 minutes, you would have known how to defend Auburn, and it was like KU never read the scouting report. I consistently watched KU slow to get down the court. It felt like Auburn, and I hate this cliche, it felt like Auburn wanted it a lot more than KU. Like, I hate when people say that. It's the most hollow criticism and hollow analysis you can give on a game. But I'm saying, if you watched that game the first 20 minutes, what team did you feel like had the urgency of an NCAA tournament game? Which team do you think played like we want to win this basketball game? It was Auburn. It wasn't close. Like, you talk about 50-50 balls. It was not 50-50. It was 90-10 balls. Auburn was just moving at a different speed. I just found this out. You guys are going to make fun of me. Listening to podcasts on, like, the up speed, oh, my, it saves so much time. I've been listening to podcasts on, like, 1.2 and 1.15.
No, you're not.
That's what Auburn was playing on. Auburn was playing on 1.5 speed, and KU was playing on the regular speed. Auburn looked like the Rockets out there. Zoom, 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 layup. Zoom, 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 three. Zoom, zoom, zoom. I mean, it was like I was watching Steph and Klay Thompson go up against KU.
We knew that, though. I mean, Texas Tech, you could argue, at the end of the season, you could argue K-State was a more talented team than KU, which is why I'm not that surprised if you really break it down. Which team had more experience? Auburn had something like, I think, eight seniors on the team. KU didn't have one guy give a speech on senior night. I get it, Dedrick Lawson's a senior, but transfer, you understand all of that. Coach, Bill Self's a better coach than Bruce Pearl, but if we're talking about on that day, if we're talking about right now with the team that he has, that's why Auburn was favored. Let's not pretend like KU was a big 20-point favorite and was Northern Iowa or VCU.
No, they weren't.
Auburn's a damn good basketball team.
Yeah, they were. And I guess for
on a neutral court against a team that's incredibly depleted. The fact that KU lost that game as a KU alum and honk doesn't surprise me at all.
I guess for me, I was very surprised.
The way it happened.
At how blah this season was for KU.
Yeah.
No moments for this season. Like, nothing of note from this season. And I was surprised how time and time again, I felt like KU got outclassed. Now, again, KU battled injuries and all that kind of stuff. There's no reason for KU to get 30-balled by Oklahoma 3 weeks ago. There is no reason why on a do-or-die, everything-on-the-line setting, you come out and you were down 26 points at halftime to Auburn. Auburn should not be 26 points better than KU over the first 20 minutes of a basketball game. That if we're giving a grade to Bill Self this season, I'm giving Bill like a C-. I thought that Bill did a very average job with this team. I always judge, and I think that Bill is the best in the country at player development. I don't know how many players on this team drastically developed between the beginning and the end of the season. I didn't see Dedrick Lawson's game get drastically better. I didn't see Quentin Grimes' game get drastically better. But I'm with you. This KU team didn't have all the talent they were supposed to have. But this KU team still has more talent than 95% of college basketball teams. David McCormick's a McDonald's All-American. Ochai Agbaji, a really good player. Quentin Grimes, a top 10 recruit. Dedrick Lawson, one of the top, 20 players in college basketball. KU team might not have had the talent of a typical KU team, but there is certainly enough there's enough talent on this KU team that we can agree this team should have been better than what they ended up being.
A C-minus is way too harsh. It's kind of like, I don't know, if you had to take algebra without a calculator, it's going to become a lot more difficult. If you're trying to win basketball games, if you're trying to win the Big 12 without LeGerald Vick, without Udoka Azubuike, without Silvio DeSosa, that's literally, let me do the math here, 3 out of 5, that's 60% of your starting lineup that's no longer on the team. So again, if you want to give him a C-, it was like taking algebra without a calculator. He didn't have everything at his disposal. If you maybe give him a letter grade, Bill Self, if anything, deserves a B. He actually did a pretty good job with this team considering how depleted they were. And quite frankly, I'm not going to say this is one of the better seasons for the Big 12, if anything. I think it was a down year. But the fact that Texas Tech and K-State shared the Big 12 championship tells me that those teams were pretty damn good. So I can't go any lower than a B for Bill Self only because he didn't have half his starters at his disposal this year. Let me flip the question. How good would KU have been if LeGerald Vick was still on the team? If Udoka Azubuike was healthy? If Silvio DeSosa could play? We'd still be talking about them. We might be talking about them as a number one seed instead of a team that we agree should have been a 7 seed.
I think they're only drastically better if Udoka plays. I don't know if they're drastically better if those other two guys play.
I'll give you that. I mean, they're significantly better if Doak plays versus those other two guys. But if you just put that one guy in there, which is a huge if, but if he stays healthy, I honestly believe KU is a 1 or a 2 seed and wins the Big 12 for a 15th straight year instead of this conversation that we're having.
And maybe just this is just a difference of perception.
They've been really healthy throughout this entire run, man. Really healthy.
I think there's still way more than enough talent on this KU team to be a little bit more consistent than they were. I think that. I don't know how many teams in college basketball can say that we lost as many guys as KU did and still have McDonald's All-Americans on your team.
A game out, Carrington, right? They finished one game, is my math right, behind K-State and Texas Tech. It's not like they got their asses kicked. It's not like they weren't in a bunch of games this year. We mentioned when they were healthy, they beat Michigan State. They beat Tennessee. They beat Marquette. All 5 seeds or better on a neutral court. And they went undefeated at Allen Fieldhouse. So if this is a down year, as a KU fan, I guess I'll take it.
But on the other side, though, I mean, you said you thought this team was a 7 seed. I mean, so I'm with you. There were,
based on the team that entered the tournament, yeah.
This year, there were 2 different KU teams.
Absolutely.
The KU team with Udoka Azubuike.
They got the number one in the country.
I do feel, I'm not saying it's unfair, but the Silvio thing, he never played at any point this season, and we always knew that could have been a possibility. Now, I'm with you. It's unfair what's happened to Silvio, but to me, throwing him in the same category of Udoka Azubuike is a little bit unfair. Udoka was playing and then just got injured, which is very unfortunate, but Silvio never stepped foot on the court one time for this game.
I'm just comparing the team that was actually on the court against Auburn a few nights ago versus the team that Bill Self brought to late night, which he thought included a front court of Udoka Azubuike and Silvio DeSosa, instead ended up being, Mitch Lightfoot and David McCormick. I'm not suggesting those guys aren't good, but they ain't Udoka Azubuike, projected to be a first-round pick.
Text line 69306, what grade would you give Bill Self this year? I'm giving him a C-minus.
I'll give him a B-minus. He tried to take algebra without a calculator. It's hard to do, man. Unless you have an abacus.
BK, where are you at?
I'd go C minus as well. I just think the expectations are different at KU.
A C minus is a below average coaching job. You think that most coaches, you think an average coach, guys, could have done a better job with this roster?
No, I think he was about average this year. I expected all year at some point that Bill was going to have an answer. I thought at some point Bill Self would have an answer of, it looked like it might have been Oche Agbaji. It looked like it might have been the four freshmen in the lineup. It looked like maybe it was just going big more often later on. It looked like there were some options there for him, but he never found the answer. And maybe that's just because of the roster, but I expected more out of Bill Self.
I just thought there was a next level for this KU team, which never happened at any point this season. Like, even after all the injuries and their roster kind of settled, I always kind of wait for Kansas to kind of, like, activate it. And I never felt like it got activated. I never felt like they found any level of consistency. I felt like Bill the entire season was trying to figure out his roster and guys who he liked and guys who he didn't like. I just don't think Bill did a great job with this team. I'm not saying Bill's still not one of the best coaches in college basketball. Sure. Like, sometimes you have off years. I just don't think Bill did a great job with this team.
When other blue bloods have an off year, guys, they miss the tournament, right? When Duke has an off year, they miss the tournament. Carolina's missed the tournament. Kentucky, just what, 6-7 years ago before Cal got there, was in the NIT. So again, if this is considered a down year or a bad year for KU because they didn't win the Big 12, because they didn't hang up another banner, you're going to have seasons like this. Even Kansas, man.
And maybe
Bill Self hasn't, but it was due.
And maybe I just hold coaches to a higher standard. Like, the whole situation about Legero Vick, I kind of hold Self for not making that work. Like, you brought a guy back on your team, and you know the relationship was rocky with him. We still have no real answer of why he left. He just left in the middle of the season. I mean, Quentin Grimes was a top 10 recruit, and he was a below average player for this team. Like, some of the stuff Bill could control. I'm with you. Bill had no control over what happened to Udoka Azubuike. He had control over a lot of the other stuff that happened. He just didn't do a really good job.
If you want to play that game, I mean, it's been that way for a few years, where as a KU fan that I am, it just feels kind of dirty. I don't know exactly what happened with Cliff Alexander. Man, I'm not sure exactly what happened with Billy Preston. You hear this, you hear that, you read the stories. But the truth is, when you don't have the complete truth, same thing in the case of Silvio De Sousa, it just feels kind of dirty and messy to be a KU basketball fan right now.
I don't know if it's that.
I got a shower, bro.
I just think sometimes when you're at the level that they're at, like, I just think sometimes you just got to do some
Old Spice body wash.
You just got to do some different stuff. Go ahead and text in. Let us know what you guys think. What grade would you give Bill Self for this season? I'm giving him a C minus. BK's about the same.
A B minus here.
For the most down team that he's ever seen in his time in KU, Sean is still giving Bill Self an A minus for the season.
A B minus.
Says that Bill did a bang up job with KU this year.
A B minus.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk a little.
I'm giving you a D.
And we'll give props coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll do some Royals props. I want to conclude our KU conversation before we do that. We were giving our grade for Bill Self for the season. I gave him a C minus. I don't really want to give him a C plus, but you could probably sway me on that. BK is about the same. You're giving him a B plus.
Yeah, B minus.
B minus. I think the difference for me and maybe everybody else reading the text line is I hold him accountable for what happened to Quentin Grimes. He was a top 10 recruit. A top 10 recruit. That means last year in high school basketball, he was one of the 10 best players. And he was by far and away the worst one and done they've had to me. Cliff Alexander was better than him. Selby was better than him. Xavier Henry was better than him. If Grimes was just average this season, it changes things for KU. If he was Kelly Oubre this season, they probably win the league. With all the injuries that happened, with Silvio not being eligible, if you just put Xavier Henry on this team, they win the conference. Like, Quentin couldn't be that this year. Somebody has to be accountable for it, and it's the head coach to me. So that a lot of my problem with how Self coached this year was you were given a top 10 recruit. Now, Udoka got hurt. I understand that. Legero Vick got hurt. A top 10 recruit, and he was a role player for you at the end of the season. That's on coaching to
me. You're talking about one thing that was in Bill Self's control, and then you're pouring all the blame on him. Quentin Grimes is a top 10 recruit. He's supposed to be this great one-and-done freshman, and he sucked. All of those things are true. But you know what else is true? And again, I keep hounding the same thing. Things that were out of Bill Self's control. The fact that Silvio De Sousa couldn't play, now maybe it's going to come out that Bill Self did have something to do with that and Adidas, and who knows what's going to end up happening there. I doubt it. The fact that Legero Vick got sent home, that's not Bill Self's fault.
I don't know how we know that, to be honest.
the fact that Udoka Azubuike got hurt, you're going to put that on
Dozo? No, I'm not putting
Udoka. Okay, just making sure.
I'm not putting Udoka.
I'm just saying there were too many things out of his control to say he got a C-, to say that he did a below-average job coaching this basketball team. That's just not true. The flip side is if those guys were healthy and they still had a second-round exit in the NCAA tournament, then I'm with you. Now I'm giving him a C- or a D. But for a guy that was playing without 60% of his roster at late night once the NCAA tournament came around, it's just too harsh to grade him like that.
I just, maybe the disagreement we had too is I still don't know what happened with LeGero Vick.
Do you think that team should have beat Auburn a couple nights ago? Do you think that that team that was on the court could have and should have beat Auburn?
No. What I'm saying is,
okay, just making sure.
What I'm saying is, if their season goes a lot different, if Quentin Grimes is a lot better, if the relationship between Self and LeGero Vick was different, or Self just says, hey, we're going a different direction, I don't want you back, we're not bringing you back, I'll go pick up a graduate transfer and you do something else. Like, I'm just not absolving him of all blame for Quentin Grimes or LeGero Vick and what happened, and the Silvio thing. We can go back and forth. Self is involved in it, just like Coach K is involved in it, and Coach Cal and all of them. Like, all of them are shady when it comes to
I refuse like, oh, to I believe no that. The no man had nothing to do with it. He has no idea what's going on.
I have no clue.
And we'll leave it at that.
I have no clue what happened.
Who, me?
BK, hit it.
Let's give props with the guys from The Drive.
All right, fellas, the first one we've got for you is an over-under, and these are all Royals related. They're props for the season for the Kansas City Royals. Just kind of get that out there. First one for you is Danny Duffy, his over-under for season wins this year. As a pitcher, over-under on wins, they set it at 9.5. Now, a few things to consider here for you guys. Not expected to pitch until May, potentially. That's according to our own Cody Tapp. And over the last 5 seasons, he has averaged 9 wins per year. So are you taking the over or the under on 9.5 wins for Danny Duffy this season?
I'm going to take the under on 9 wins. I just don't have a lot of confidence right now. Oh, I guess let me clarify this. If we're talking about 9 wins as a starter, I feel very comfortable with the under. I know with wins, you can get wins as a relief pitcher. Just as a starter, if he's not going to be there until May, and I can see them for the first month having him be a relief pitcher, I just don't know if you have enough opportunities to get 9 wins. So I feel pretty confident about the under.
C-Dot sounds like a guy that's not as much of a gambling degenerate as me because he's forgetting the hook. It's 9.5, so Danny Duffy actually has to win 10 games, which is not going to happen for a couple of reasons. One, he's not healthy. Two, as C-Dot just pointed out, he's probably going to end up in the bullpen as his season goes along. So if I had to set Danny Duffy's over-under, BK, I'd set it at 7.5, and I'm still taking the unders, man. I just don't believe in him. When he's good, he's great, but he's just wildly inconsistent. I don't think he's going to win 10 games. I'm taking the under all day on Danny Duffy.
Kind of branching off of that, the next one I've got for you, I came up with this one. Which starter do you guys believe will finish the season for the Royals with the most wins? So this is as a starter. Went and looked this up for you. Projections right now of both Duffy and Junis with 10 on the season. Keller has 9 according to the projections. Last year, Junis led the team with 9 wins. So who you have winning the most games as a starter for the Royals in 2019?
I'll pick Brad Keller. I think he's the best starter that they have on their team. Go ahead and set me for Brad Keller at 12 wins for the season. I could see him going like 12-9.
I'm not going that high, but I am going with the same name. I think it's going to be Brad Keller. You point out that Jacob Junis, what'd you say? Last year, how many BK wins did he have?
9.
9 wins. I think 8 of those came in like his first 10 starts or something like that. He was terrible the second half of the season. So I'm going to go with Brad Keller, and I'm going to say the number's probably closer to 10. I'm going to say Brad Keller leads the team in wins with 10.
Sticking with the starting staff for you guys, Ian Kennedy, I set this number over under 10 starts for him in 2019. We know that he's going to start the year in the bullpen. That's according to the Royals. But Ned Yost compared his potential role this year to what Chris Young gave them in 2015 and 2016. In those years, Chris Young started 18 and then 13 games for the Royals. So are you taking Ian Kennedy over or under 10 starts this year?
I just have a really quick question. When he says that his role is going to be like Chris Young, is that supposed to encourage you or discourage
you? Hey, Chris Young was pitching for the Royals in the World Series.
I'm just curious when he says that his role is going to be similar to Chris Young's, if you should be really
excited. That doesn't
excited
get you excited? Woo! Chris Young, baby, Ric Flair.
I'll go under on wins for Ian Kennedy. I think that the best case scenario for the Royals is he gets to 10 starts, but it's not on the Royals. I think the best case scenario is he's a really good relief pitcher and they could trade him at the deadline. That's the best case scenario for the Royals.
I got one for you, Brandon. Who's stealing more money from the Royals this year, Ian Kennedy or Alex Gordon?
Ian Kennedy.
Yeah, Ian Kennedy.
I'm with you guys there because I guess Alex Gordon has an outside shot to what, like hit 260 and play pretty good defense. When it comes to Ian Kennedy, I'm taking the unders. I think that he's made his bed, and his bed is in the bullpen. He's not going to get 10 starts this season.
And if anything, people like Alex Gordon. I don't know anybody that's like, you know what, I'm a big fan of Ian Kennedy. I don't know any person that's an Ian Kennedy
bigger
fan.
Picture, how long do we just give Dayton Moore the ultimate whatever you do, I'm cool with because you took this team to back-to-back World Series? How long does that last? Another 2 years, 10 years, 20 years? Because if you really look.
I think it's hard to say without knowing how those years are.
Like, but let's say, at the draft and the moves that he's made. I mean, the guy had the Midas touch for 4 or 5 years. The last 4 or 5 years, not a ton of good moves.
I guess I'm asking in your hypothetical, let's say by the end of the third year, they win 80 games. I think that people are still really happy with Dayton Moore.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, we got to see how Raul Mondesi develops, or we got, like, there's a lot of things to see. I mean, I would say, I think by 2021, they should be competitive.
You're much higher on Mondesi than me. Before the show, I said, I think the Royals only have one good player that I can definitely count on, and that's Whit Merrifield. And you fought me to the nines.
I just don't know if you've been watching, if you don't think that Mondesi's a good player.
Let's get to him then. Let's get to Adalberto Mondesi. His over-under for the year, according to Vegas, is 19 and a half home runs. I've got a few stats for you guys. He's projected for 18 this year by FanGraphs. Last season, he hit 14 homers in the big leagues
in 75 games.
Are you taking the over or the under on 19 and a half home runs for Mondesi in 2019?
There's no way he hits less than that if he plays this year. The plan, we agree, is for Mondesi to play at least 140 games this year. There's no way he hits less than 20 if he plays 140. No way.
Yeah, you just gave us the numbers right there. He was on pace to hit over 30 home runs last season, so he's certainly going to go over that number. I'm not saying he sucks. I'm not saying that he's not the Royals' best player. I'm just not at the point yet to say he's a good baseball player right now. If we're talking about Las Vegas setting his over-under at 18 home runs, that's an average Major League Baseball player right now.
I mean, at 23 years old, I think it's certainly
he's
a lot
better. He's got great upside.
Average.
I'm talking about what he is right
like
now.
Also his third best tool.
The only really good Major League Baseball player that the Royals have that I can see on the entire roster, and you can include the starting rotation and the bullpen, and this pains me to say, is Whit Merrifield. Guys like Jorge Soler have a lot of upside. There's plenty of players that if they have a career year, we'll look back on it and go, see, he didn't suck. But as of right now, 48 hours away from opening day or 72 hours away, the only good player that I can say the Royals have is Whit Merrifield.
Yeah, I think you're crazy if you don't think that Mondesi's a good player. I think you're crazy.
I just want to see more.
Again, I'm not.
I'm talking about right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not on the Mondesi is Francisco Lindor. I'm with the we need to wait and see with that. But, I mean, he's 23 years old. He hit 275 with 14 home runs this year. Again, if you extrapolate it out and he plays every day, there's no reason not to think the Mondesi could hit 300, 20 home runs, and have 80 RBIs this season. That is a great player.
Oh, I'll believe that when I see it.
Final one for you guys. Jorge Soler, his over-under for the season is 14 and a half home runs. Last year, he hit 9 homers, but he played just 60 games. FanGraphs has him projected for 13 this season, but they don't think he's going to play very many games. So, are you guys going to take the over or under at 14 and a half home runs for Jorge Soler?
I'm going to take the under because he hasn't shown me the ability to stay healthy.
Interesting.
I'm going to take the under because he can't stay healthy. That's the only reason why. I like Soler. I think he was turning the corner. I thought he had a really good season when he was healthy. He just hasn't really stayed healthy. Like, we talk so much about the power of Jorge Soler. Like, when have we ever had the opportunity to consistently see it? I mean, this over-under that he has of 14 and a half home runs, he's never done that before in the major leagues. He's just never on the field long enough. 24 games, 101 games, 86 games, 35 games, 61 games.
And he's played 96 over the last 2 years combined since he got to Kansas City.
He just has to stay on the field for me to pick that. So I'm picking the under solely based on that.
Yeah, so basically, BK, you're asking me, is Jorge Soler going to be healthy? Because if he is, he's definitely going to hit 15 home runs. He's going to get the opportunity. I think he's going to DH a ton. So I'm going to take the overs, but again, he's probably going to get hurt and end up with 12 or 13.
And that concludes Give Us Props. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get into the ultimate toss-up today. We'll do that next. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Yesterday, I'm not going to lie to you guys, I was a little bit sad for the end of an era. I like Rob Gronkowski. I think he's been a lot of fun. I think he's been a great player to watch. I have adamantly argued on this show time and time again that I think Rob Gronkowski is the greatest tight end of all time, which now is the perfect time to bring up the ultimate toss-up. Who is the better tight end, Gronk or Tony G? This is the thing. I think it's very clear who's had the best tight end career of all time. It's Tony Gonzalez, and it's not close. If you want who I think every tight end after him has kind of been modeled after that's been a great tight end in the NFL, they're all modeled after Tony Gonzalez. From Antonio Gates to Jimmy Graham to Travis Kelce to Rob Gronkowski, they're all modeled after Tony Gonzalez. So he is the mold. He is the blueprint. No denying that. But if you're asking me at their peak, if I was doing a fantasy draft, if I could start my team, which tight end would I want to start with at their absolute highest power at their peak? I would take Rob Gronkowski. Whenever Gronk goes into the Hall of Fame, and it should be first ballot, and whoever's going to be arguing that he should get into the Hall of Fame, I wouldn't do a whole lot of talking. I would just pop in one tape and show you a video. I would show you 2 years ago, regular season game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were down. It was just Brady and Gronk, and they were just playing pitch and catch. And Gronk made a catch that nobody his size should be able to make. What is Gronk? 6'6", 285. He bent down and had like a shoestring-level catch, and he keeps going. And just Gronk was an absolute athletic freak. I think if we're arguing on the field and their ability, Rob Gronkowski is the greatest tight end we've ever seen.
The catch you're talking about might be the best tight end catch this side of Tony Moiaki's preseason catch like 10 years ago. Anybody knows what I'm talking about, hit me up on the Protein House Eat With A Purpose text line at 69306. Here's the numbers. Tony Gonzalez, 111 touchdowns. Rob Gronkowski, 79. Tony Gonzalez, 15,000-plus receiving yards. Rob Gronkowski, 7,800. So when you want to talk about production, it's not even close until I bring up the fact that Rob Gronkowski, even though it seems like he's been playing forever, has only been in the league since 2010. So we're talking about a 9-year career. Tony Gonzalez, wait for it, played 17 seasons between 1997 and 2013. So if you're talking about longevity, Tony Gonzalez is the answer. If you're talking about production based on the time they were on the field, it's not even close. Gronk was a much better tight end. 79 touchdowns in 10 years versus 111 touchdowns in 17 years.
And I would just say some of the massive numbers that he put together, we just didn't really see from tight ends. That it wasn't just the yards. It was the touchdowns, too. Like 2011, Gronk had 90 catches, 1,327 yards, 17 touchdowns. He then followed up the next year. Now he was banged up, injury prone, like Gronk kind of was during his career. In 11 games, he had 11 touchdowns. Like, Gronk was a touchdown machine. To put it one step further, Gronk played in 115 games, started in 100 games. He has 79 touchdowns. The only player in NFL history who has more receiving touchdowns in the playoffs than Rob Gronkowski is Jerry Rice. Like,
that's crazy.
What an absolute touchdown machine Gronk was. Again, no disrespect to Tony Gonzalez. And you brought up a point that Tony Gonzalez's career was twice as long
twice
as Rob
long.
Gronkowski. That longevity factors into it. The fact that Tony Gonzalez, from the second year of his NFL career until he retired, played every single week certainly gives you the edge if we're talking career over Rob Gronkowski. But I'm talking about Gronk had a 9-year stretch. Think about it like this with Gronk. He is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he retired before the age of 30. How many guys have been able to do that? Because Calvin Johnson played when he was 30 years old. Barry Sanders played when he was 30 years old. Gronk retired at 29 years old, and we all agree is eventually going to be in Canton, Ohio. Like, that's how great he was whenever he played.
As a tight end, your greatest ability is often your availability, and Gronk, just especially the last few years, hasn't been there. Compared to Tony Gonzalez, in his 17 seasons, he missed a grand total of 2 games. Not to mention, who was throwing the ball to Tony Gonzalez? Before he got to Atlanta and he had Matt Ryan, he was catching balls from Tyler Thigpen and Brody Croyle and all these different dudes.
I actually heard that BK threw a couple passes to
him. He did. Incomplete, but he tossed them. You know? And then you've got Rob Gronkowski. Remind me, who was throwing him the football?
Tom Brady.
So doesn't that make a little bit of a difference when you're arguing who's the better player?
Can I give you this stat, though? Because I found this really interesting. This is from Scott Barrett on Twitter, at Scott Barrett DFB.
I was actually going to say that he also had Bill Belichick coaching him and not Gunther Cunningham, which is a big difference,
my
too.
Friend.
Which is a big difference. Like, everybody says he didn't have a Brady. He'd have a Belichick.
No love for
either.
Herm Edwards? Or Todd Haley?
He had Herm Edwards.
Romeo?
He had Herm.
Is he still there for Romeo? Yes,
no,
BK.
He was gone by
yes,
then.
BK.
So since Gronk entered the league in 2010, Tom Brady has a 103 passer rating in games that Gronk was active. Basically, he was Patrick Mahomes whenever Gronk was active. He was inactive for 51 games. In those 51 games, Brady averaged an 87 quarterback rating, which is a below average quarterback. Last year, that would have been basically Eli Manning. So in some ways, Gronk also helped Tom Brady in a massive, massive way. So if we're going to give credit to Gronk for having Tom Brady, we also have to dock Brady for having Gronk.
Let me ask you this. Do we think today is a good day for the Chiefs or a bad day for the Chiefs?
Based on this news?
Based on Gronk being done. Do we think today has any effect on the Chiefs?
If anything, a good... I mean, Rob Gronkowski, even though oftentimes last year he looked like he was running around with a grand piano on his back, he did have a couple of big catches to beat the Chiefs, so it's definitely a good day for the Chiefs, absolutely.
I actually think it's a little bit of a bad day.
Really?
I think it's a little bit of a bad day because they can get better at the position. Like, there was a time there they could have got Jared Cook. Jared Cook is a better tight end in 2019 than Rob Gronkowski. You guys know I got all the respect in the world for Gronk, but I was telling y'all Gronk was washed and he might have actually had a little bit still left in the tank.
A little.
Gronk's done. Gronk's 100% done. He's now retired. That now gives them the ability to go get somebody who is better than Gronk in 2019. I actually think this is kind of bad for the Chiefs. Now, I don't think it's like a dire, like the person they get to replace Gronk is not the deciding.
Well, because you're acting like these
factor.
Great tight ends grow on trees. Once we stop
there
talking.
There are some really good ones
no,
in this
draft.
No, there's not. Yes, there are.
Oh, in the draft.
Yeah.
I'm talking about in the NFL. Right now there's like five guys that we can name, and then there's 25 teams. We don't even know who their tight end is. So to pretend like Gronk's going to retire and all of a sudden the Patriots are going to go out there and improve at the tight end position, maybe they will 2, 3, 5 years down the line. But for the next couple of years, it's a good thing for the Chiefs that they don't have to deal with Rob Gronkowski. Absolutely.
I just seen the Patriots. And maybe I'm giving Bill Belichick way too much credit, like how we think every veteran move is going to work out for him. Like,
are they going to bring Shannon Sharpe out of retirement?
That's a great signing for him. I could just see them just finding some all-purpose running back.
The OG Kellen Winslow comes back?
Who has like 800 yards and 9 touchdowns. Like, I can just see the Patriots creating that person next year.
Nah,
I could be completely overvaluing it. I could just see the Patriots, not the next Gronk, but I could see them finding Ebron, Eric Ebron. Like, I could see them making that kind of signing and then him turning into a player.
How much do you think Gronk deserves credit for Brady and Belichick's success? I know that's crazy. I'm not saying that he deserves the bulk of the credit, but he has to deserve some of the credit because if Gronk wasn't there, do you think that combination's as good as it's been?
I think that I feel like sometimes we don't give people enough credit for like symbiotic relationships. Like sometimes two players need each other. Like a lot of people were making this argument last week, BK, when we were talking about, well, look at the last 10 years. Teams haven't had number one receivers. The Patriots' number one receiver has just been Gronk.
Yes.
Like no one would argue that Gronk isn't a number one pass catching option. Is he Antonio Brown? Is he Odell Beckham? No. But no one would argue that if we're talking the 9 years he were playing, how many pass catchers would you say were better than Rob Gronkowski? He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So I've always felt like the argument of, well, teams don't win with number one wide receivers. The Patriots do win with the number one wide receiver. He just plays a different position. Just like if, let's say the Chiefs, something happened to Tyreek Hill, it's hypothetical. I'm not saying about the investigation, if something happened to Tyreek Hill, they still have Travis Kelce. That, yes, he doesn't play wide receiver, but Travis Kelce is as talented as any wide receiver in the NFL.
That's what I was going to say. Gronk, if you think about it, is the only long-term great pass catcher, tight end, wide receiver, running back, whatever, that Tom Brady's ever played with. I get it. For a couple of years there, he had Randy Moss. He had these guys. But when it comes to longevity, the only guy that he's had around is a great pass catcher, pretty much coinciding with his entire career, is Gronk.
Text line 69306, to act like a tight end in the draft is automatically going to translate year one is a bit presumptuous.
I'm with you there, text line.
Aren't we doing the same thing with the Chiefs in pass rush?
That's different, though.
Aren't we doing the same thing with Chiefs in corner? Why is it different for the Patriots, but it's not different for the
you
Chiefs?
You can plug in a secondary member. You can plug in a cornerback and mask it a little bit easier than you can a tight end, especially a pass-catching tight end if you're trying to replace a Rob frickin' Gronkowski. It's a little bit easier to replace a nickel corner.
Yeah, I mean, which one harder to play in the NFL? Pass rush in the NFL, corner in the NFL, or I play on the New England Patriots with their scheme. Again, I'm with you of stepping in year one. I'm just saying is the Chiefs are counting on their draft picks and guys being able to help them from year one, too. I don't know why it's different for the Patriots, but it's different
because
for the Chiefs
defense sucks. So if you plug in just an okay college football player, they should start right away. That's why.
They're going to be better than Justin Houston and Dee Ford in year one. Good luck with that.
I look at the Patriots' offensive positions. They leave a lot to be desired. Like there's definitely a lot of room for improvement.
Their number two receiver is Philip Dorsett.
On the Chiefs' offensive skill position players. Coming up in just a little bit. We're going to talk about teams you hate and Zion Williams.
Are we really?
All wrapped up into one. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
A little bit of breaking news. Missouri has officially announced that it has filed its appeal with the NCAA for their bowl ban. This is from Jim Sterk. athletic director for Missouri, as the university prepares its vigorous response to these unfair penalties, the spirit of our student athletes have been buoyed by widespread support of our student alumni, university supporters, and our elected officials in Jefferson City and in Washington, D.C. That unified support has been the most gratifying for all of us associated with this great institution. We will continue to work diligently to make it right. Right for those student athletes, coaches, and fans who were impacted by these penalties as they now stand. That is Jim Stirk, the athletic director of the University of Missouri, to give you an update on the situation. The NCAA has 30 days to respond to the appeal. An in-person hearing date will be established after that. This is certainly going to take probably most of the summer. I think we'll know by the time football season begins. But Missouri has officially appealed its bowl ban for the upcoming season. I made a list of teams, and I'm very curious to get you guys' thoughts on this team. Because the one thing I have learned over the last 48 hours or so is how much you guys really hate Duke. And maybe I'm just different because I don't really hate Duke with the same passion that many of you hate. But some of y'all really hate Duke. So I made a list of teams I think are the teams that are universally hated. I'm not saying there are not other teams out there. Like, certainly Chiefs fans, you don't like the Raiders. But we'd agree that the hate for the Raiders is not the same as the hate for the New England Patriots because, let's just be honest, the Raiders don't win a whole lot for everybody to hate them. No one really hates the consistently 4-12, 5-11 football team. There ain't really that much to hate on. I think there are only three teams that are universally hated in American sports. Duke, the Yankees, and the Patriots. I think there's some other teams that people dislike, like the Cowboys, but I think there's some kind of laughing at the Cowboys of, we treat them like they're America's team, but yet they've won two playoff games since 1995. I think there's only three teams. I want you guys to tell me if I'm wrong. Duke, the Yankees, and the Patriots. Nobody outside of New York likes the Yankees. Nobody likes the Yankees. Everybody hates the Patriots. Last year's Super Bowl, if you just swap the Chiefs for the Patriots, I think 30 million more people watch the Super Bowl. I think Patriots fatigue has bubbled over to the point that people are just done with them, and I don't want to watch them anymore. I'm tired of them winning. They cheat. I'm sick of Brady. I think the Patriots' hatred is at an all-time high. And every single fan base seems to hate Duke.
When you win as much as the Patriots, it's only natural. I mean, I'm surprised that there's not more hate for the Golden State Warriors. The only teams that I can think of that have won as much or even close to as much as New England, and everybody didn't go, "Ah, screw them, I'm over it," the current Golden State Warriors and the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls. That's it. Most of the time when you win, people don't like you. I would argue, however, that the Cowboys are still nationally a much more hated franchise than the Patriots. The Patriots, people don't like a winner, and some people, for whatever reason, don't like Tom Brady. But when it comes to a franchise, it's not even close. Many more people have a hatred for the Cowboys than they do the Patriots. Let me throw a college football one in there real quick.
Really
Notre
quick,
Dame.
Though, really
I think
quick,
people
though.
Hate Notre Dame, too.
I think the difference is with the Cowboys is, I think a big reason why people hate the Patriots is they think they're cheaters, which is that's different to me.
Yeah.
Like, your dislike for the Cowboys is a little bit different. Everybody listening right now thinks the Patriots are cheaters. I think the Patriots are cheaters. Like, they've openly been caught cheating multiple times. That I think that... I think them always winning fuels it. I think the fact that they cheat fuels it. I think the fact that Bill Belichick, the leader of it, is viewed as this, like, mastermind with the hoodie and it's all cut up.
Well, that's why people don't like Duke, because of the individuals. People didn't like Christian Laettner. People didn't like J.J. Redick. It was really easy to hate a guy like John Shire. When it comes to Zion, I think there's crossover. I don't think people hate this Duke team. Do you?
No, I don't think so. And that's where I kind of wanted to talk about it from is, I think that this Duke team is different. Because there are enough people like me that started cheering for him. I treat Zion like an NBA player. I don't care what college he'd went to, I was going to cheer for that team. He could have went to anywhere but Kansas because that's my team rival. He could have went to Texas Tech. He could have went to UCLA. He could have went to Indiana. I do not care what team is on. It's kind of like LeBron to me. I don't care what team LeBron is on. He could go play for the Grizzlies. He can go play for the Kings. He can go play in the EuroLeague. If you got LeBron James on your team, that's my favorite.
And I think that Zion is the closest to what LeBron James would have looked like in a college uniform. To me, that's why it's must-watch appointment television. I don't hate Duke. I'm a big KU fan, but I don't hate Duke. I respect their program, but I love watching Zion. I mean, you have to watch Zion, right? If he's playing and you're not watching him, you're the one who's missing out.
But I think Zion and Duke have taken on a little bit of an NBA personality that a lot of casual NBA fans, and I would put myself in the casual fan. I like the NBA. I would not consider myself a diehard by any means. I cheer for players. I like watching James Harden. I like watching LeBron. I like watching Steph. I like watching the great. I like watching Giannis. I don't care about the Milwaukee Bucks. I care about watching Giannis. That I think Duke is. I think Duke and Zion have reached the same way. Yesterday, when I'm watching the game, no part of me was cheering for Zion, or no part of me was cheering for Duke. I don't care about Cam Reddish. He's a great player. I don't care about R.J. Barrett. Great player. Nothing wrong with him. Trey Jones is fine. I want to see Zion Williamson continue to advance in the NCAA tournament. So if that means Duke has to win because of it, so be it. I'm cheering for one thing in the NCAA tournament, and that's Zion Williamson to advance. I don't care about anything else that happens in this tournament. Now that KU's out of it, all I want to see is Zion advance.
Is there even a player or scenario that you can compare Zion in this one-and-done season to? Even if you want to cross-sport compare, like to Tim Tebow. Who is a more well-known player while they were in college? Right now, Zion or Tim Tebow?
I would say Tebow just because college football is a little bit bigger. Plus, he won the two national championships. But I think he is... I don't want to say approaching Tim Tebow because Tebow kind of took on this like mythical folklore that he became. And he became
Tebow,
like a,
Manziel.
And he became like a religious figure. Like Tebow just like transcended
but
everything.
But what college basketball player could you even closely compare him to? Like Jimmer Fredette, a 6'2 white guy out of BYU that we knew was never going to make it. To me, that's the biggest difference is when you're watching Zion, not only physically does he look completely different. He looks like a Tyrannosaurus Rex out there with a bunch of college basketball players, but also the projection. I'd be shocked. If Johnny Manziel was ever a good NFL player, I'd be surprised. Same thing with Tim Tebow. If Zion's not a Hall of Fame NBA player, I'm going to be shocked.
This is the thing, too, about Zion, and I know we're up against the break, is I don't think people realize how hard it is to be relevant for a long time in 2019. Like, Kim Kardashian is incredibly relevant because everybody has an opinion about her. Everybody has an opinion about her.
She's the one with the tape, right?
Either you love
Just
Kim Kardashian or you hate Kim Kardashian. Like, if we start talking about it right now, everybody has a strong opinion about it. It's really hard, I would say, in 2019 to kind of get through the noise and everybody to have a strong opinion about you. Everybody listening has an opinion on Zion Williamson. You don't have an opinion about Kyle Guy. You don't have an opinion about Luke May. Like, this tournament has been about one person. It's Zion because he's the one college basketball player that we all have an opinion about and that we all care about. Either you want to see him lose, either you think he's not going to translate to the NBA, either you just seen him dunk a couple times on Instagram. He's the only college basketball player that all of us have an opinion
on. Have you met
on.
Those people, though, that want him to lose? I mean, 99% of the time, if you're a MU fan, you hate Andrew Wiggins. Or if you're a KU fan, then you hate whoever Kentucky has. Have you met anybody that's not rooting for Zion? Even the Duke haters out there. I haven't.
I think a lot of people are rooting against Zion.
Do you really?
I think they're rooting against Duke.
They're always rooting against Duke, but BK, rooting against Zion specifically?
I think it goes hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, I
think he crosses over. I think he's that transcendent where people still root against Duke but root for Zion.
Yeah, I disagree because I think that part of what's happened in our society is kind of like what happened to Trae Young last year. It is the discovery of him where no one knows who you are. We then discover you. ESPN, which is part of the machine, and they got business and they got ads to sell. They will put him in front of you every single chance they get, and then people then hate that person because ESPN. I mean, that's exactly what happened to Tebow. Exactly what happened to Tebow was it was really cool, and then ESPN went overload and talked about him all the time, and then people turned on Tim Tebow. The same thing is happening to Zion Williamson right now.
That happened to me with Imagine Dragons. I thought that I discovered them, and I was like the first one to ever hear them. Then they got huge, and they're playing halftime, and now I'm like, yeah, screw Imagine Dragons.
Coming up in 2 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.